I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We're going to teach them how to run away from an alligator, okay? If they escape prison, how to run away. Don't run in a straight line.
Alligator Alcatraz. As President Trump tours a massive new immigrant jail in the Everglades, the Senate passes the budget bill, with Vice President J.D. Vance needed to cast the tie-breaking vote.
On this vote, the yeas are 50, the nays are 50. The Senate being evenly divided, the vice president votes in the affirmative. The bill as amended is passed.
What many call the big, ugly budget bill includes massive cuts to Medicaid and historic levels of funding for mass detention and deportation. We'll go to Florida and D.C. to talk about Alligator Alcatraz, the contents of the Senate bill, and what's being done to oppose it as it goes back to the House. Then to Los Angeles, where armed, masked federal agents have carried out arrests in communities across the city. And families and immigrant advocates say they're struggling to find their loved ones after they are taken, then disappeared. And ICE has arrested yet another U.S. citizen.
Everything happened so fast, so yeah, and they didn't identify themselves, so I was kind of scared.
This comes as the Trump administration is suing Los Angeles and the L.A. mayor over their sanctuary policies. We'll go to California, all that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The United States Senate has approved a sweeping package of tax breaks for the wealthy and deep cuts to social programming, including Medicaid and food assistance. On Tuesday, Vice President J.D. Vance cast the tie-breaking vote to deliver a major legislative victory to President Trump.
On this vote, the yeas are 50, the nays are 50. The Senate being evenly divided, the vice president votes in the affirmative. The bill as amended is passed.
Three Republicans broke ranks to join all Democrats and independent senators in voting no. Senators Tom Tillis, Rand Paul, and Susan Collins. The legislation passed after a compromise was worked out with Alaska Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski, despite her concerns that slashes social safety net programs. The Senate reconciliation bill also includes a historic increase in funds to ramp up Trump's mass detention and deportation efforts, deregulates AI and cryptocurrency industries, ends subsidies for renewable energy, and even imposes new taxes on solar and wind farms. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer warned of political consequences to Tuesday's vote.
Today's vote will haunt our Republican colleagues for years to come, as the American people see the damage that is done, as hospitals close, as people are laid off, as costs go up, as the debt increases.
The Congressional Budget Office estimates the Senate bill will add $3.3 trillion to the national debt over a decade. House members are rushing to return to the Capitol to vote on the Senate-approved version of the bill ahead of a Trump-imposed July 4th deadline. We'll have more on this story after headlines. Here in New York, election officials have declared Zohran Mamdani the winner of last month's Democratic primary for New York City mayor. Tuesday's release of ranked choice voting results show Mamdani, a New York State Assembly member and Democratic socialist, easily defeated second-place finisher and former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo with 56% of the vote compared to Cuomo's 44%. Mamdani won with 545,000 votes, more than 27 U.S. senators received in their most recent elections. On Tuesday, President Trump threatened to arrest Mamdani over his campaign pledge not to cooperate with federal immigration agents carrying out Trump's mass deportation orders.
Well, then we'll have to arrest him. Look, we don't need a communist in this country, but if we have one, I'm going to be watching over him very carefully on behalf of the nation. A lot of people are saying he's here illegally. We're going to look at everything.
In a statement, Zoran Mamdani condemned Trump's threat as an attack on democracy and pledged, quote, "We will not accept this intimidation." Mamdani also spoke with TV station New York One.
What we're seeing in President Trump's rhetoric is an attempt to focus on who I am, where I'm from, what I look like, how I sound, as opposed to what I'm actually fighting for. Because to do so would be to display the stark contrast in our sincerity in actually delivering for the very working people who've been left behind by our politics.
In Gaza, Israeli forces have killed at least 43 more Palestinians, including people seeking aid and displaced families sheltering in tents. Al Jazeera reports in just 5 weeks, Israel's killed at least 600 Palestinians as they sought aid at distribution sites run by the militarized U.S.-Israeli-backed so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. This comes as Gaza's largest hospital, Al-Shifa, has exhausted its supplies of fuel to run generators due to Israel's ongoing blockade. At least 350 kidney failure patients in Gaza face imminent death as Al-Shifa doctors Tuesday were forced to shut down the hospital's dialysis ward. Israel's continuing slaughter and blockade came as President Trump claimed Israeli officials have agreed to finalize a 60-day ceasefire in Gaza, though Israel has not yet confirmed its approved conditions for a new deal. A new study finds the Trump administration's halt to foreign assistance through the U.S. Agency for International Development could result in 14 million additional deaths by 2030. Researchers publishing in the British medical journal The Lancet compared the impact of the Trump administration's cuts to a pandemic or major armed conflict, warning, quote, "Unlike those events, this crisis would stem from a conscious and avoidable policy choice, one whose burden would fall disproportionately on children and younger populations and whose consequences could reverberate for decades," unquote. The study was published as U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio celebrated the end of USAID on Tuesday, writing in an online post, quote, "We will not apologize for recognizing America's longstanding commitment to life-saving humanitarian aid and promotion of economic development abroad must be in furtherance of an America-first foreign policy," unquote. The Trump administration notified states Monday it's withholding $6.8 billion in funds designated for public schools. The money was approved by Congress 4 months ago and due to be dispersed by July 1st ahead of the new school year. Instead, school districts and states are now scrambling to shut down services, including after-school programs and support for English language learners. The Trump administration has not said when or if it'll release the funds. In an email to states, the Education Department says it, quote, "remains committed to ensuring taxpayer resources are spent in accordance with the president's priorities," unquote. A federal judge in Rhode Island halted the Trump administration's efforts to radically restructure the Department of Health and Human Services. On Tuesday, U.S. District Judge Melissa DeBose ruled HHS Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s mass firing of staffers and his elimination of entire programs is likely unlawful, writing, quote, "The executive branch does not have the authority to order, organize, or implement wholesale changes to the structure and function of the agencies created by Congress," unquote. RFK Jr. is seeking to eliminate 10,000 jobs while slashing programs, including disease prevention, anti-smoking campaigns, and food safety inspections. President Trump toured Florida's new immigration jail dubbed Alligator Alcatraz Tuesday, flanked by Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. Alligator Alcatraz is a hastily built camp on an isolated airfield in the Everglades with massive tents that'll hold immigrants in cages with multiple bunk beds. Trump mocked detained immigrants, saying they would have to learn how to fight alligators in order to escape. The jail's surrounded by alligators, pythons, and other Everglades wildlife. Hundreds of protesters rallied outside in response. This is Mokosuke Leader.
We love our land, we love our water, we love our habitat, we love the trees, we love the immigrants. We think it's very wrong what they're doing.
Trump's visit came ahead of plans to transfer the first group of immigrants to the jail this week. The ICE jail is expected to hold up to 5,000 people awaiting deportation, costing an estimated $450 million a year to operate. We'll go to Florida for more after headlines. The Trump administration's quietly transferred more immigrants to Guantanamo Bay, U.S. Naval Base in Cuba, including nationals from China, Jamaica, Liberia, and the United Kingdom. CBS News reports that as of Tuesday, at least 54 immigrants are currently detained at Guantanamo. The Trump administration suing Los Angeles, seeking to overturn the city's sanctuary policy, which Trump's Department of Justice claims is obstructing the enforcement of mass raids. On Tuesday, Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass publicly condemned Trump's crackdown.
We know that Los Angeles is the test case, and we will stand strong. And we do so because the people snatched off city streets and chased through parking lots are our coworkers, our neighbors, our family members, and they are Angelenos.
This is the latest in a string of lawsuits the Trump administration's filed against other sanctuary jurisdictions, including New York, New Jersey, and Colorado. We'll have more on Trump's ICE raids later in the broadcast. A New York federal judge has temporarily blocked the Trump administration's early termination of temporary protected status, or TPS, for over 500,000 immigrants from Haiti. DHS Secretary Kristi Noem had previously announced the relief would end in September, placing over 500,000 Haitians at risk of deportation. Judge Brian Kogan, who's a George W. Bush appointee, ruled the move was unlawful and ordered the relief remain in place until its scheduled end date of February 2026. The Supreme Court's rejected an appeal from oil and gas giant ExxonMobil to halt a record $14 million penalty for thousands of air pollution violations at its plant in Baytown, Texas, one of the largest petrochemical sites in the country. The case was filed in 2010 by Environment Texas and the Sierra Club on behalf of residents living nearby. The violations fell under the Clean Air Act, a federal law that limits air pollution from industrial emitters. The Trump administration's found Harvard violated federal civil rights law, saying the university failed to address reports of harassment of Jewish students on campus in response to Gaza Solidarity peaceful protests. This comes as the University of Pennsylvania's caved to Trump's demands to ban transgender athletes from women's sports teams and erase the records set by trans swimmer Leah Thomas. Thomas is a UPenn graduate who won the 2022 NCAA championship in the women's 500-yard freestyle. The parent company of CBS News has agreed to pay $16 million to settle a $20 billion lawsuit brought by Donald Trump, who objected to the way CBS News 60 Minutes edited an interview with his opponent, Kamala Harris. Paramount board chair and controlling shareholder Shari Redstone reportedly sought the settlement to ensure the FCC approves Paramount's $8.4 billion bid to merge with Skydance Media. In April, 60 Minutes longtime executive producer Bill Owens resigned amidst disagreements over how to respond to Trump's lawsuit, saying he'd, quote, lost the independence honest journalism requires, unquote. In May, CBS News president, CEO Wendy McMahon also stepped down, saying in a parting memo, quote, the company and I do not agree on the path forward. And here in New York, jurors have reached a verdict in all four but one count in the crimes trial of hip-hop mogul Sean Diddy Combs. The judge overseeing the case said jurors had unanimously agreed on four counts, two on counts of sex trafficking and two prostitution charges, but remained deadlocked over racketeering charges. Prosecutors accused Combs of repeatedly assaulting several women, drugging and coercing women and men to perform sexual acts, and being part of a criminal organization that engaged in sex trafficking, forced labor, kidnapping, arson, bribery, and other crimes since at least 2008. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
House members are rushing to return to the Capitol to vote on what many are calling the big, ugly budget bill by President Trump's July 4th deadline after it passed the Senate, just barely eked by on Tuesday. The Senate reconciliation bill includes tax cuts for the rich while increasing barriers for millions to access to Medicaid and food assistance. It also deregulates the AI and crypto industries and subsidies for renewable energy, even imposes new taxes on solar and wind farms. The bill includes a historic increase in funds to ramp up Trump's mass detention and deportation efforts, which we'll talk about next. Vice President J.D. Vance was needed to cast the tie-breaking vote after hours of negotiations with three Republicans joining all Democrats in voting no. Senators Tom Tillson, Rand Paul, and Susan Collins. The legislation passed after a compromise was worked out with Alaska Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski, despite her concerns it slashes social safety net programs around the country. On Tuesday, Democratic Congressmember Jim McGovern lambasted Murkowski for voting yes despite her concerns.
And listen to this quote from Senator Murkowski, who just caved and voted for this bill. And you got to love this. She said, quote, "My hope is that the House is going to look at this and recognize that we're not there yet," end quote. I mean, my question to her is, if you really believe that, then why the hell did you vote for this bill? It doesn't make any sense. It's a dereliction of your duty as a United States senator and as a representative for the people in Alaska. I mean, when was the last time this current House of Representatives has fixed or solved anything? I mean, where have you been, Senator Murkowski? This Republican House is dysfunction on steroids. And let me say to my Republican friends, I understand that the Senate just jammed you, but you don't have to be complicit. I get it. I know the Republican leadership and Trump don't want scrutiny. They don't want the American people to understand what's really happening here. This bill is a middle finger to millions of Americans. It isn't just a bad bill. It is the most dangerous piece of legislation in modern history. Dangerous because of the very real damage it will do to real people, sick people, hungry kids, families just scraping by. If this is Republicans' top legislative priority this Congress, it tells us everything about where your values lie. And it's not with working families, not with struggling communities, but with mega corporations, billionaires, and Donald Trump.
That's Massachusetts Democratic Congressmember Jim McGovern. Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska responded to criticism of her vote in favor of Trump's budget bill during an interview with NBC News Ryan Nobles, who caught up with her in the hallway.
Senator Paul said that this was, that your vote was a bailout for Alaska at the expense of the rest of the country.
Oh, my.
That's what Senator Paul said.
This one was easy.
Senator, we've got the...
I didn't say it, ma'am. I'm just asking for your response.
My response is I have an obligation to the people of the state of Alaska. And I live up to that every single day. I fight for my state's interests, and I make sure that Alaskans are understood. When people suggest that federal dollars go to one of our 50 states in a, quote, bailout, I find that offensive. I advocated for my state's interests. I will continue to do that, and I will make no excuses for doing that. Do I like this bill? No, because I tried to take care of Alaska's interests. But I know that in many parts of the country, there are Americans that are not going to be advantaged by this bill.
But
I don't like that.
I know that in many parts of the country, there are many Americans who will not be advantaged by this bill, the Alaska senator said. For more, we're joined by Ezra Levin, co-founder and co-executive director of Indivisible, a grassroots movement with over a million participants and counting. They're calling on voters to contact lawmakers to oppose the bill as it goes back to the House. So, Ezra, this is not done. The Senate required J.D. Vance, the vice president, to cast the tie-breaking vote, and now it goes back to the House. Can you talk about what's at stake here and Indivisible's strategy in dealing with the House, both Republicans and Democrats?
I mean, what's at stake is the worst bill in modern American history passing, the largest transfer of wealth from working class and lower-income Americans to the rich. A massive cut to Medicaid, a massive cut to SNAP, historically massive, and funding a mass deportation force in this country at the levels of the Russian military. They want to take what they're doing in L.A. and move that show on the road, do it in Austin, do it in Seattle, do it in Chicago, do it in New York. That's what's at stake right now. And the good news is it's not a done deal. As you said, they passed it by the skin of their teeth. In the Senate, it took J.D. Vance casting the tie-breaking vote, and now they can lose up to three votes in the House, just three votes. If they lose four votes in the House, it's done. And right now, I can tell you, they don't have the votes. They do not have the votes right now. The House leadership is doing their best to whip those votes, to try to convince them to come over, but they don't have it yet. So our strategy right now is very, very simple. We need as many people as possible today, this morning, calling in to their representatives. If you've got a Democratic representative, great. Call them up. Thank them for fighting hard. Tell them that you are watching and that you're cheering them on. If you've got a Republican representative, congratulations. You have such a large amount of power right now because your representative might be the vote that kills or delays this bill. It is very important. If you've never called your member of Congress, today is the day to do it. If you have called your member of Congress before, great. Get in touch with family members, colleagues, friends, neighbors. Tell them this is the day. They need to get outside their comfort zone a bit and call their member of Congress. And if you've already done that and you're feeling a little bolder, get a few friends together and go to your local member of Congress's district office and show up and in a friendly way. Ask them to represent you. That's the strategy. We've got 26 targets of House Republicans. We need four of them on our side today.
And Ezra, could you talk about some of those targets of House Republicans? Who are the key figures that are more likely to vote no on this bill?
So there are two types of House Republicans who are possibly going to vote no on this bill. The most right-wing members of the Republican caucus, the folks like Marjorie Taylor Greene, who don't think this bill goes far enough, would like bigger deportation forces, would like bigger cuts to Medicaid, would like bigger tax cuts for billionaires. That's one segment of the caucus. The other segment of the caucus are the folks who are in vulnerable districts, who are worried that they might lose their reelection because this bill is one of the most unpopular pieces of legislation in modern American history. This is folks like in California 40th, Ken, Representative Ken, California 22nd, Representative Valadeo, Schweikert in Arizona 1st, Siskamani in Arizona 6th. This is representatives in Colorado, in Michigan, in New Jersey, in New York, in Pennsylvania, in Virginia. They're all over the country. If you are in a quasi-swing district, and you are a Republican right now, the top thing on your mind is what happened in 2017 and 2018. Republicans attempted to push forward a repeal of the Affordable Care Act. It was deeply unpopular. The public focused on it. The public was angry, and it led to the largest midterm margins in the history of the Republic in 2018. Republicans don't want a repeat of that if they're in a vulnerable district, so they're very nervous. What they hope is that people aren't paying close enough attention. Millions upon millions of Americans don't even know this bill exists, let alone what's in it. That's why Congress is moving so quickly now. I ask yourself, where is this deadline coming from? Is there a July 2nd deadline that we're just not aware of? Why is the vote coming right now? They could do it next week. They could do it next month. They could do it 2 months from now. Why now? The answer isn't about policy. It's about politics. They understand how deeply unpopular this bill is. Leadership in Congress understands that the more time this takes, the more public attention there is, and the more difficult it's going to be to wrangle their caucus to actually vote for this thing. That's what's driving this expedited process. So I don't know if we can win outright today and just kill the bill. I think that we can delay it, and delaying it might lead to a win.
And when you mentioned that most Americans don't know much of what's in the bill, could you talk about some of the provisions that have received least attention? For instance, what's happening with the slashing of Pell Grant funding?
Oh, my gosh, Juan. So here's what everybody listening to this program, I think, understands. This is an egregiously bad bill. They've looked at the reports. They've seen the cuts to Medicaid, the cuts to education, the cuts to environmental programs, the cuts to billionaires' taxes. The sad fact is that most of the time, most people aren't paying attention to what Congress does because most of the time, Congress isn't doing anything. They're not passing legislation. It's a lot of partisan squabbling. It's a lot of yelling at each other. But ultimately, it's gridlock. Congress just doesn't move forward. The most recent poll that I saw found that only 8% of the American public knew that there were Medicaid cuts in this bill. Medicaid cuts are deeply unpopular. They've got a 15% approval rating in the deepest red districts in this country. We're talking in Marjorie Taylor Greene's district. Medicaid cuts poll at 15%. And yet, less than 10% of the public even knows that Congress is proposing the largest cut to Medicaid in American history. What I would recommend to folks, if you've never engaged with your member of Congress, if you've kind of checked out, you don't think you have a role here, I would encourage you, don't hold back now. You don't have to be an expert in this bill. You don't have to be an expert in Pell Grants or in Medicaid or in tax policy. That's not where your legitimacy comes from. Your legitimacy comes from the fact that you are a constituent and your vote counts as much as the highest paid lobbyist in Washington, D.C. And if you happen to live in a Republican district right now, it counts for even more. So don't let if you haven't read the 1,000-page bill, that's okay. You have valid opinions and you should express them now because they could actually do so good.
Let me ask you something, Ezra. At the same time that this bill passed, we got the confirmation that Zoran Mamdani won, this huge upset win. He won by 12 points over the former governor of New York. I mean, there was a point where Zoran Mamdani had 1% name recognition. Of course, Andrew Cuomo was extremely well known, was 40 points ahead. The whole campaign was about affordability, many of the issues that are being addressed in this bill. In fact, Zoran Mamdani won more votes than U.S. senators in 27 states, including the Senate Majority Leader. Is this a warning to everyone in the House right now around this bill?
Look, Mamdani ran an incredible campaign, and he was up against a bully and an abuser and a tool of a broken establishment. And so it's no surprise to me that he was catapulted not just to win by the skin of his teeth, but he trounced him. He really blew Cuomo out of the water, and that is great to see. I think what it highlights is a couple of things. One, the voters want people to help solve their basic problems. They want to lower the cost of rent. They want to lower the cost of childcare. They want to lower the cost of transportation. That's what government should do. The government should make it easier for people to live their lives. And that's what Mamdani is actually promising. Now, I think he won in part because of that proactive vision, but he was winning in a Democratic primary against a Democratic establishment that couldn't be further from rank-and-file Democrats right now. You don't have to be the leftmost member of the Democratic Party to think the folks currently in charge have failed us and we need a new vision. And I think both of those things fit into Mamdani's historic win here. And I think if the Democratic establishment is smart right now, they would be rallying around him as the primary winner, because this is not the last contentious primary this cycle. We're going to see contentious primaries in mayoral and congressional elections for the next year or so. And if the Democrats fail to rally around Mamdani because of some concerns about his progressive program, you might see a